from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get their work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Boyle gets behind the center. Jarrett Patterson takes a knee. And the preseason is over. The Texans concluded by beating the Rams 17-15. The opener 2 weeks away. Bring on Indy, road tilt to start the 2024 campaign. Texans will wind it down to 53 men by Tuesday, and they wrap it up strong with a 2-point win over the Rams today.
You can hear the pep in Mark Vandermeer's step, man. He's ready for Indy. He hates Indy.
I think he called Indy roadkill.
He said roadkill. He said road tilt, but it is more fun to think roadkill.
I like to think you were going on the road and we're about to mow down Indy.
Yes.
Roadkill.
Like a squirrel.
Yeah, like a flattened, just a bunch of tire tracks over all those clowns.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you can hear the pep and Vandy step there. Mark Vandermeer on the call on Saturday. Well, 17,
it would be fitting. I feel like 25% of the population of Indiana looks at roadkill as a delicacy.
So yes.
We'd be feeding the, just one of the many more charitable works that the McNair family does is feeding the people of Indiana with roadkill.
Right. 25% of the population sees it as a compliment. Thanks. Yeah, roadkill.
This one was killed by a diesel, I think. Mm-hmm. I think a hint of, oh.
Mm-hmm. The caviar of roadkill. How are you?
It's less than 3 days old.
It's still fresh.
Sick weirdos up there.
How you feeling, man? How you doing?
I feel good. I've got a little bit of angst about these cuts that are coming up. I did a little exercise yesterday where I went through and this has been a very competitive training camp, but I think a lot of it's been concentrated mostly at places like the running back position, the wide receiver position. Mm-hmm. There are some other positions on the team where, after going through all of the potential cuts, I realize, all right, man, you know what? We're not actually as deep as I'd like it to be. I had zero emotional attachment to any of the potential interior offensive line or offensive tackle cuts.
Yep.
The linebackers, I think, I wish I'd been a little bit more miserable about potential cuts there. So there's some positions that are very hotly contested, and then there's others where I think we might be looking to somebody outside the team as a backup in some of those spots.
Corner. Right. I got my 53 right here that I did yesterday for the podcast, for the Utopia podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Drew it up on the back of a cocktail napkin / piece of paper here. And corner was the one where I'm like, ooh, wow. It drops off quick after Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter. And B, I can really see why they're throwing Jalen Petrie at slot corner. It's not just that that's where Petrie might be best suited. Like, I don't know that he's... I don't know how good the solutions are at corner right now.
Well, yeah, I don't know, though, too. I think part of that is that, for one, you know, Petrie's more of a hybrid linebacker / safety than he is a safety / cornerback. I'm okay with Dez King or Miles Bryant if they end up being the slot corner. I think like Dez didn't help himself at all with that muffed punt or that missed tackle in the game the other day. I think those guys are in competition there. But just overall depth, yeah, if you're gonna keep six cornerbacks or so, there's not anybody you get really genuinely excited about.
No, I had five corners and five safeties on mine just because, yeah. I have Petrie listed as a safety. He's sort of like,
okay,
it's like 5.5 and 4.5. You know, yeah, what I mean? So I won't go through my whole 53 because I think once you and I get done doing these couple of hours of radio, we'll have fleshed out a lot of where we feel on these things, Seth. And again, the Texans do win that game 17-15 if you care about the final score. I think the biggest storyline to me, and you touched on it, is the running back position. And we said on Thursday and Friday of last week, like, the possibilities of what could happen with Damian Pierce on Saturday ranged from doesn't play at all, in street clothes alongside other guys who have earned starting roles on this team. It still feels like Damian has work to do that, or he plays the whole first half and gets as many touches as Cam Akers ends up getting in the game. Akers had 10 touches in the game. It was still in the fourth quarter returning kicks.
That's what was really interesting about it is that, man, I felt like the running backs, you could see where, you know, Nick Caserio had said on the Pat McAfee show that there were probably five or so guys where it was really a real competition going into that last game. And if you look at the way they handled the running backs, every one of them was a target in the passing game.
Yep.
You saw British Brooks used as a fullback. You saw, as you mentioned, Cam Akers being used throughout the entire game. I think they really wanted to get a feel for all of this. And I think a couple of things might have come from it. If I watched that game and I was genuinely trying to make a decision, then Cam Akers is on this team.
Gotta be, right?
He's just, yeah. I mean, he checked all the boxes in terms of things you want to see. That one cutback against the grain on a zone run, which he did last week as well. He was used as a receiver. And then he, who may have been the smallest running back out there other than maybe J.J. Taylor, was probably the most physical guy on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he trucked Jason Taylor III. I have no idea if he's related to Jason Taylor, the Dolphin, on the sideline. When he was going out, every chance he had for contact, he lowered his shoulder and went after it. Like, he was trying to prove something. And, and then that spin move, that 3.5 spin moves, which, Sean, I know from the Olympics that move gets named after him now.
It's an Akers?
It's an Akers 1, yes.
And he did not have the twisties at all. He was all about spinning and spinning and spinning. That was a fourth down play, too. I know it's a preseason game, but you're playing it like it's a real game. That was 4th and 3, had to have it. Catches the ball, dismisses the first guy with a nice little juke, and then spins. We'll play the audio from all this a little bit later. This is my big question with Cam Akers. If he's not on the team, why the hell did you bring him in the first place?
Yeah, I know, because like, this is exactly what you would... what did I call it? I called it an experiment, because he's coming off of a second Achilles tendon tear. I cautioned everybody, you know, look, he's coming off a second Achilles tendon tear. He wasn't really that good after the first one. And so it's an experiment. It's a cheap experiment, and they'll see. Maybe there's upside there. And I feel like every reason I was skeptical, and I still would be just because of, you know, injury history
Sure.
But as far as the guy on the field, from the moment he showed up, there hasn't been a single moment where I've thought that guy looks like he's recovering from an Achilles tendon
tear.
If you had asked me, if I knew nothing about the Texans, and I went out to that game on Saturday, and you said, hey, try to pick out the guy who had an Achilles tendon tear 9 months ago, Cam Akers would have been dead last. He would have been the last guy that I thought. Well, certainly not the little guy that's pulling off a, what does that end up being, a 1050 or whatever?
Exactly.
When he's spinning or trucking guys on the sideline or cutting back against the grain. So I'm all on board the Cam Akers train right now. I don't think that means he's going to lead the league in rushing or anything, but he provides something that I haven't seen the other running backs on this roster in the preseason provide.
I'll be legitimately disappointed if he's not on the team. This was D'Amico Ryans on Saturday after the game. Very first question right out of the shoot, he was asked, Why didn't Dameon Pierce play in this game?
I didn't play Dameon because I've seen enough from Dameon in practice and everything, so I've had a good look at Dameon.
All right, so no effusive praise, not a long answer, short answer.
Yeah,
Real quick, you've pointed out that there could be two reasons for it. He could have made the team, or he could be on the trading block, one or the other.
It's funny that D'Amico gave that answer, and I think there's a lot of people are having a very polarizing response to it, too. Some people, like I did a live stream about this, and some people said, Seth, you silly fool. You might be pretty, but you ain't so smart. Obviously, they're planning on trading him the way he gave that answer. He said, we've seen all we need to see from him. But I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. In normal, if it were other coaches, I might say that. If it was another situation, that would be my first reaction too. But I think this team last year stuck with Dameon for far too long at the beginning of the season, waiting for it to click. And D'Amico and others have been effusive in their praise about how Dameon looks in practice. And it just makes me nervous that maybe D'Amico and Nick have a blind spot for Dameon Pierce. I could understand having a blind spot for him because you absolutely love everything about the kid except for the way he's currently running the football, whether it's good blocking or bad. You know, I'd asked him earlier in the week what Damian's biggest obstacle was, and, I mean, D'Amico said bad blocking. Like, he hasn't had good blocking. Now, this is a guy that, remember, D'Amico very rarely criticizes players in press conferences, and he threw the whole line under the bus in that instance.
At the expense of Pierce, yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like that's what makes me nervous, that they are just emotionally invested in Dameon Pierce, and it's clouding their judgment. I get the contention that was just coach speak and they're planning on trading him. I hope that's what they're doing, but I just don't know.
Let's compare. We just heard the answer, very short answer, about why Dameon didn't play. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game on the performance of Cam Akers.
Cam has done a really nice job since we got him late there in training camp, but he's stepped in, he's done a really nice job, and everyone sees, like, when he gets the ball in his hands in the games, he's able to make defenders miss, and he's able to continue to press forward and make plays. So exciting, right? And it's tough, right? And it's also, I love that it's tough to make these decisions because that means you have a good football team. And when it's not just set, you know, you still have decisions to make. That's how it should be.
Okay, I don't like that last part. Okay, let me be clear. I don't like him I didn't hear the whole question. So maybe the question also had to do with tough cuts at the end, and that's why he's bringing that up. I feel like just the answer in a vacuum, the very end there is when, you know, your parents are preparing you that you're not getting that air hockey table for Christmas, you know?
Yes.
Right? So that part worries me a little bit. I will say this, and we'll know more in the next 24 to 36 hours. It's three, whatever, however many hours. It's 3 o'clock. Tomorrow is the deadline to make these cuts. This Dameon Pierce thing, and I can't believe I'm saying this about Dameon Pierce because he's so popular and he's a great dude. But if this turns into Dameon Pierce making the team and Cam Akers not making the team, this has the potential to be kind of the first thing that the fan base gets legitimately upset at D'Amico Ryans about.
Right. I think it's my first, it's our first fight, I think.
Yeah.
How strong is our relationship? We have to see if it can withstand our first fight. And there's kind of a baseball feel to this too, almost like a Kyle Tucker, like, come on, why are you guys so in love with Kyle Tucker? What are you even doing? I would imagine that 90% of the people who said that right now have actively denied that in their brain.
Oh,
they don't
yes.
even remember
yeah.
that there was a time when we
Sucked.
Were kind of, that people were disgusted that they
yes.
were, that Kyle Tucker was untouchable.
Trade him.
So, I mean, that's the other avenue you have to keep open is like, all right, man, maybe they just know and believe, and somehow it will click at some point, but it's hard.
It is. All right, we're off and running on a Reaction Monday. We are under 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Cannot get here soon enough. Texans win on Saturday against the Rams, and now it's cut down time. I would imagine we're going to start hearing about some of these cuts today. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media at 9 o'clock today, so maybe they start trickling out after that. So we'll see, but we'll keep it tuned here to Sports Radio 610. We'll have them all as they're happening here over the next couple of days leading up to the 53-man roster deadline tomorrow at 3 o'clock. The Astros, they had a weekend. They get a split in Baltimore. Is it a split that we feel good about because it's against a good team, or is it an opportunity that was missed? We will discuss that coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Astros, they're 4.5 games up. They split with the Orioles this weekend. So this is one of those series.
Oh.
This is one of those classic, on the one hand, this, but on the other hand, that series. Because on the one hand, it is the Orioles. They are a better team than you record-wise. You go on the road, you get a split. And that's, you know, you stood toe-to-toe with one of the other best teams in the American League. On the other, and you did it without Yordan Alvarez for three of the games. So no, you don't have your best offensive player, maybe the best hitter in the American League. You don't have him in your lineup, and you managed to still split. He was in the lineup on Thursday, but he missed Friday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday. Now, on the other hand,
what?
The Orioles scored 13 runs in this series, and 10 of them were driven in on three swings. Brian Abreu gives up the grand slam to cough up the 5-2 lead on Friday. Taylor Scott comes in for a very frustrated Framber Valdez after Jonathan Singleton kind of lollygagged a ground ball to first base that allowed the inning to stay alive. And Taylor Scott gives up a bases loaded double, I guess it was, cleared the bases. So that gives the Orioles a lead they would not relinquish. So the two losses, literally the runs that mattered, all came in on basically two swings. And your relievers couldn't get a guy out. They need to get one guy out. Get that guy out, and you win those games. And then last night, it almost was the same thing.
Yeah.
The three-run home run from Urias, I guess it was. Thankfully, Alex Bregman and Yiner Diaz, back-to-back jacks, get him out of the situation.
Yeah, that was monstrous in the moment. And it's been... I choose to look at this through a positive lens just because, I mean, even Chandler Rome, who writes for The Athletic, he gets accused of, maybe being overly cynical at times. A lot of people feel like some people feel like he's a hater. I mean, to the point where Dusty was, asking him to go read some Camus to maybe have a different perspective on life.
On life, yeah.
By the way, if somebody's recommending Camus as the guy to make you happy or whatever, it's a bit of an obstacle. That's like you got to work your way through Camus before you're... Because I took Dusty's advice, and you get there, but you got to deal with a whole bunch of existential dread beforehand.
Good warning, Seth. Good warning.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but that's where it is with Chandler. Chandler wrote a piece this weekend that honestly... It was almost like it felt like gushing praise of the fact that the Astros are even in the position they're in right now, given the rotating cast of dudes you've never heard of or maybe had passing knowledge of, and yet they keep getting it done. But then Abreu lets you down, or Taylor Scott lets you down, guys you don't necessarily expect to let you down. That, look, being 500. On the road trip at this moment, they're 500 on the road trip, right? Yeah.
They're 3-4. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Red Sox.
Three and four on the road
trip. Yeah. Well, the Red Sox game was at home, so sorry. They're two.
Yeah.
The road trip is 4 games in. They're 2.
Yeah,
and two.
Yeah. So they're 2-2 on this road trip. They're 1 game away from being over 500 on this stretch of going versus the Red Sox and the Orioles.
Yeah.
That it could be a whole lot worse. And the fact that those were, you know, other than the Thursday night game, this is like I still feel like this is a scrappy, differently composed Astros team that's getting it done in different ways. But I have as much faith as them as I did when they're in the midst of their winning streak.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. Like these things are going to happen. The bullpen, the pitching staff as a whole has been incredible since the bad start to the season. So to sit here and expect perfection the whole way, it's disappointing the way that it happened. The Framber one was the one that was really disappointing because it was so unnecessary. If Singleton just charges that ball, you're out of the inning. And Framber probably still has what would be a 9-game winning streak now since June 18th. Framber was visibly frustrated after that play, and I couldn't tell if it was, and he probably answered the question after the game. I think I actually saw his answer after the game where he kind of took collective blame for it. He and Singleton both, and Espada kind of blamed both of them too, that Singleton was a little nonchalant about fielding it. Framber was a little nonchalant about covering first base.
Yeah.
And so it's probably on both of them. So Framber, and I think Framber even said we when he was talking about it after the game. But that was a tough one. That was a tough one because Singleton nonchalanted that ball, and then Taylor Scott, who's been so good all year, like the wheels have come off slightly. I mean, his numbers are still good, but Taylor Scott hasn't been nearly the middle of the game hammer that he was earlier in the year. Yeah. So he gives up that hit to Holiday.
The one that was tough about Singleton and Framber is that, I mean, if it were different guys, if there were different players involved, it would be easier to excuse it as a misjudgment or something. Where with Singleton, I don't doubt his effort or anything like that. It's just I don't think he's, you know, he's not A plus as a guy that can actually charge that ball, perhaps. You know, the base runner is, he's got like dead center average MLB speed. He's not slow, he's not fast. But like Framber's got a history of not covering first when he's supposed to be covering first, or doing it as like Framber's the guy that I can't excuse in that moment. I'll excuse Singleton on the basis of just sheer ability. Framber's just got Framber cannot make assumptions. Right. Anytime Framber gets to a point where he assumes that this is going to happen or that, no, you need to be textbook and everything.
Yes. Last night's game, hey, look, man, there's 5-0 in Kikuchi starts. I know he wasn't great last night, but they're now 5-0.
Well, he only got 11 hours of sleep, Sean.
Yeah, that's not enough. He's a sleep enthusiast, man.
He's one of these guys.
I don't know how he
like
does
that,
it.
Just like Verlander and Bregman that have really latched on to the importance and power of sleep. Did he say he usually gets 14 hours of sleep a night the night before a game?
I read this about him when they traded for him, and I don't remember. It was more than 12. I know that. Like I remember seeing 12 as a number, so it might have been like 12 to 14 or something like that.
I don't think, this is the thing I think about those guys who have talked about how much sleep they get. I don't think that's what they get every single night. You got to remember, baseball players' sleep schedule is pretty erratic. So given you every normal night you get to bed really late, and then when you're traveling, you're trying to sleep on an airplane after a night game and all that, I think they have episodes where they're catching up on their sleep, but and they commit to it. But I can't imagine that they're in bed for 12 hours.
What's your target each night for sleep?
Seven plus, ideally. If I can go a long stretch of 7 hours of sleep, then I get to the point where I'm usually waking up after 6.5 and feeling really good. I try to, my big thing is if I wake up with an alarm, then I know I gotta schedule an early bedtime.
There you go.
I gotta start. So I go to bed early until I stop waking up with an alarm, because I typically don't need an alarm.
Yeah, I'm between 6 and 7, and then I catch up usually on Saturday.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do that this weekend because we had Texans, you know, like one of the weekend days, I'll go 10, you know?
You know, one of the things I've realized over time is that I can't use whether or not I feel tired as an actual gauge. I'm the same way with hunger. Sometimes I won't notice that I'm hungry until all of a sudden I'm flipping out on somebody for no reason whatsoever. And I'm like, oh, all right, I might be a little hypoglycemic here. So, and I don't flip out anymore, but you know, I get agitated.
Yeah.
You know, Sean. So can I tell you a quick airport story? Should I tell the story I told you? Okay. So, all right. So I'm
flying.
So I was flying into Buffalo a little while ago, and I felt great. I felt great. Felt just as fresh as a daisy. But when you fly into Buffalo, a lot of times you're on the little regional jet hub of the airport. It's like the oldest part of the airport. It's got 7-foot ceilings. It's kind of depressing, and the gates are all like B3A, B3C.
Yeah.
You don't even have a dedicated gate. So I'm I was at O'Hare, and I'm like, I've never been to F terminal before, and it was like F2 something on my gate. So I get to this part of a terminal, and it's a brand new, but it was like F1 through 3 in this little section. And I'm looking around for F2. I see F1 and F3. I'm looking at the opposite side of the concourse. There's no F2 at all. And I'm like, what the hell is, where is my F2 whatever? And I asked this lady, and I was like, hey, I'm at gate F2. Where is F2? And she said, there is no F2. And then my mind was completely blown, because like, all right, well, look, I'm a pretty seasoned traveler. Lady, my ticket says F2. And so I show it to her. And in my mind, I had read it like F21 or something. And she said, that's...
like it was a subgate of F2?
Yeah.
Kind of thing? Yeah.
Because I was in regional jet mode. And she said, that's... And she looked at me like with forgiving eyes. And she was like, that's gate F21. And I argued with her. I said... politely, I was like, no, it's F21. And she said, no, it's just gate F21. Gates F4 through 30 are down that way. And I've never been... it's the most embarrassed I've been in a long time. I've been more embarrassed before, but that's about the most embarrassed I've ever... I was stone cold sober.
Yeah.
And that was the moment I realized I was sleep deprived.
Right. Yeah.
That was how I knew, okay, I got to schedule some sleep.
You can't even blame like a language barrier or something. You know what I mean? Like if it was an actual word and you're like, oh, sorry, no, speak English.
I thought this was Arabic. Yeah, I didn't realize. I apologize.
No, it's numbers. Those are a universal language.
21. So there are numbers above 20, you say. I get it.
How long did you get chippy with her?
I wasn't chippy with her. Like I said, I argued. Like I said, like I, you know, I pushed debated back. With her or whatever. Yeah. I was polite about it and everything. Right. I wasn't. But there was a part of me that was like, she just isn't getting it. she must be new. Look. She doesn't understand the whole subgate terminology.
I went to Cornell.
Yes.
Never heard of it.
Dude, that is exactly, Ben, Seth told me this story before the show. That's exactly what I said. I said Seth was probably, after that whole thing, Seth looked at her and said, I went to Cornell.
This is why I try to be as forgiving as possible on stupid mistakes that athletes make. Because sometimes in the game, you're just, imagine if I had a 30-second play clock when I was trying to find my gate.
Right.
I would have been yelling at the sideline.
Call timeout.
Calling timeout. It's fourth down. Oh, my God. It's actually plenty of time, and it's not fourth down.
That's funny. Someone said too many pills, Seth. No, Seth is clean, man.
I'm clean. Like I said, I hadn't had a drink in at least over a month when that happened.
Yeah. No, you're doing
good. I had just seen at O'Hare, they have a self-serve craft beer dispenser.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, this feels like the future.
Wait. And where did they have this? At O'Hare?
Self-serve craft beer.
Wow.
Like a tap. It's a tap. Like you go up and you pour your own.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. It's a crazy world we live in.
Is it free refills?
It depends on how much you trust this camera surveillance, I guess. Yeah. I can't imagine it is. I'm guessing you have to go up and scan your credit card.
Oh, okay, they probably have a little.
And probably your license. I bet it has your license too. You know, because now whenever
the magnetic strip on there. Yeah. Text message: Singleton has no room for error. He's a scrub and needs to do everything and anything to stay in the game. Well, that's not nice.
The first base. I mean, we're at a point where. I know a lot of people thought it was, or think that it's ridiculous that they would think about putting Bregman at first base, and I'm like, if that's what saves his arm, are you honestly telling me you like any of these guys at first base better than Bregman? I don't care if he's short; he could be 4'11". He's a better option at first if that's how you got to get him on the field.
It was good to see him at third base this weekend, just to see him out there. So that was good. But you're right. Chandler had another piece. Chandler had two good pieces this weekend. The one you're talking about, which basically is like a. I read it. It was almost like it felt like he was making a great case for manager of the year for Joe Espada in that piece you were talking about. When you see listed all the things that the Astros have gone through this year, I think he called them the most bizarre juggernaut in Major League Baseball. Chandler,
juggernaut.
The other piece he had, it was a game recap, but it was the story of the Singleton game. Was just how awful it's been at first base for this team this year. And that's where Abreu double screws you. Jose Abreu, that is where it's not just that he was so bad, but he was so expensive and they were so invested in giving him a chance, they didn't go find a plan B. at first base. Like, once you cut him, it's like, okay, now you're out over your skis after you cut him, and you're, like, grab-bagging with Singleton and DiCenzo and putting Dubon over there. They've played eight different guys at first base since letting Abreu go. That's incredible. He got let go at the end of May. They played eight different guys at first base in that time, according to Chandler's article.
That's what I thought about on that Singleton play, that Singleton slash Framber play, was, all right, yeah, you know who probably just makes that an easy out at first is Bregman. He's never played first base at any level, apparently, maybe since Little League or so.
He said no affiliated level, so not...
No affiliated level, but he said, but then he said also amateur or pro.
Okay.
So I don't know if he meant, like, he hasn't... I don't know what he meant by affiliated, if just,
Yeah, not a first baseman. But to your point, I think he would have charged that ground ball and touched first base on Saturday night.
I like, since we're so into experiments this year in both Achilles tendons and in baseball at first base, I like the idea that maybe if Bregman has that challenge of playing first base, that it makes him even a better batter than he's been as of the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah,
just like it dials in something to where he gets out of his brain a little bit and he's just unconscious at the plate because he's focused on first. Maybe a little bit, or, you know, I guess Jordan's better when he's playing left field.
Yes. Yeah.
Even in freaking, man, Camden Yards has never felt so much like an actual yard as when Jordan's out there in left field.
Dude, Dubon running into the wall last night? I could think of was like, oh, God, thank God that wasn't Jordan. Sorry, Doobie. Oh. Thank God that wasn't Jordan.
We should have updated everybody, so...
We'll do it in headlines.
We'll update you on the potential car crash that happened in left field.
Yeah, we'll do it here in headlines coming up next. We got Texans, we got Astros, we got NFL news, contract disputes. We got it all in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the Astros just so we can pay off on
let's
the tees. Yeah, so we can pay off on the tees as to whether or not Mauricio Dubon is alive. He is alive. He survived.
He's alive.
He survived the run into the cement wall. I know, Ben, big round of applause from Ben Gary, our producer, for Mauricio Dubon. If you missed it, this is when the game was still tied. If you missed it, fly ball down the left field line. Mauricio Dubon, Gold Glove utility player, by the way, he had to run 130 feet to catch this ball, and he went flying into the left field, the sidewall in left field in Camden Yards. And according to the guys on the broadcast on ESPN, there is zero give to those walls out there.
Honestly, and I would say maybe it's hard to grasp 130 feet necessarily. That's like 43 and a third yards. So like basically imagine running 40. As fast as you can. And how do you slow down? I hit a wall.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not a metaphorical wall, your legs got tired. You hit a wall.
No.
Right at the end of your 40-yard dash.
And not even like a wall of a tent where the whole thing will just cave in if you hit it. Like, that wall ain't moving. And so he was down. He was writhing in pain on the ground. Actually, he wasn't even writhing. Like, he was still for a while. Like, it was scary.
Yeah.
He ended up getting up, walking off under his own power. The report after the game was that he's sore, obviously, but nothing serious. It's not going to be out.
He said he felt like he got beat up.
Yeah.
Which, honestly, so all the test results came back negative, but I immediately felt sad because I thought of, like, I hope he doesn't know how to really have, like, be beat by a group of dudes.
Yeah.
Like, I had this image of a young, innocent 13-year-old Mauricio Dubon.
You mean,
probably
like, how
an altar boy at the church or something, you know, and, like, some kids roll him for his lunch money and just beat the crap out of him.
You mean, like, how he looks now?
Yes. Can you imagine him at 13?
Yes.
The poor kid.
Yes, I can.
He'd just be the object of every bully and some group of 16-year-olds beat the crap out of him.
No, you're right. Yeah, that is true. When someone says it feels like I got beat up, that's probably someone who's been beat up a few times.
Like his whole body.
Right.
Yeah.
Astros win last night 6-3. They split with the Orioles. They're up 4.5 games on the Seattle Mariners. They're in Philly the next three nights to take on the Philadelphia Phillies. Might be a day game on Wednesday. I'm not sure. It'll be Blanco, Verlander, and Hunter Brown in this. No, sorry, Spencer Arrighetti. It's confusing because the Astros at first put out a pitching rotation that didn't include Ronel Blanco. And Chandler Rome even tweeted out, like, doesn't look like Ronel Blanco's starting in this series. They originally had Verlander, Arrighetti, and Brown. It was a mistake. It was a clerical error. It is going to be Blanco tonight, Verlander tomorrow, Arrighetti on Wednesday. So we're into the 5 days rest era of Astros pitching right now.
Yeah, in Verlander's long, slow recovery, and where maybe it would have taken him a while to get back into peak form. It took him, what, about two innings to where he just then he looked like he got stronger as the game went along in his first game back. So I'm feeling perhaps irrationally confident in Verlander.
Good. Yeah, he retired his last 10 guys the last time he was out there. So
it's a weird thing to say. I feel irrationally confident in Verlander.
In a future Hall of Famer, but he's...
You know what it is, and then it's because Yordan had this neck soreness too, so yeah. I hear neck soreness these days, and I'm kind of like, well, that sent Verlander forever, but Yordan should play tonight.
Yordan should play. There was a chance he was available last night if they needed him to pinch hit, and he should be back. So Yordan's thing looks to be just temporary. His neck issue, if you were out of the loop over the weekend, Yordan missed all three games, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with a neck issue. So that's your Astros. The Texans are in the process now of cutting their roster down to 53. One person we know will not be on the 53-man roster, safety Brandon Hill. He was the only casualty from Saturday's game that we know of. He's done for the year with what's being described as a significant knee injury. He was carted off the field. It happened in a weird situation. It happened on a punt. He was kind of backpedaling towards the punt returner, and he got shoved by a Ram, and his foot kind of got caught in a weird way in the field turf, and apparently it did some serious damage to his knee, so he will miss the season. Here was D'Amico Ryan's. As far as the game itself, 17-15, the final score, I know one of the things you said you wanted to see, Seth, even though it wasn't starters in there, was the Texans run the football. Even if it's the backups in there, let's see them run the football. They went for 6 yards a carry in this game. They ran for 156 yards. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the O-line in the run game.
Just from the sideline watching, I feel like our O-line did a better job of staying attached and finishing blocks today. Always have to go back and watch the film to see, you know, who stood out amongst the group. But I like how they work collectively today to allow us to run the ball.
Cam Akers specifically, when I'm thinking about the offensive line, that play where he cut back against the grain, I know it's tempting to think, well, okay, the offensive line didn't actually block well, but Cam Akers was able to make something from nothing. The backside offensive tackle on that play, who's the international player, whose name eludes me. Because you know what? He wasn't even on the game day roster. He was number 66, and that wasn't even listed on the game day roster.
Okay.
He's the guy that gets the special exemption because he's international.
Killing something or other, I think.
Yeah. He did a really nice job on that of the backside defensive end took the wrong angle. And when the end tried to get back on the right angle, he did a little Laramie Tunsil-style mini tug, and it was perfect. Like, Tunsil is really good at the little withholding with offensive linemen. They'll let you get away with it as long as it's only for a microsecond. So that guy, the international player, gave the little tug, and the end had taken the wrong angle because he's supposed to be sealing the backside, and Cam Akers was off to the races on that. Like, little stuff like that. I saw more evidence of the nuanced stuff out of the backup offensive linemen. And the running backs in general, like Jawar Jordan, I thought, showed a really good grasp and feel for zone running. Cam Akers obviously had a really good day. I think British Brooks, in a lot of Texans fans' mind and my own, is the guy that's most exceeded expectations. I mean, he's got a level of athleticism and shiftiness that I didn't think he had in his bag, and they tried him out at fullback a couple times, or at least H-back or whatever. But I think, like, if I had to choose right now, if my only choices at fullback were Troy Harrison or British Brooks, I'd be British Brooks all day long. Harrison had a rough day other than his touchdown.
Yeah, we'll get into some stock up, stock down in the next segment based on that game. I'll tell you right now, and by the way, Killian, I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, but Zier, Z-I-E-R-E-R. That's the international player you're talking about, number 66. He's an offensive tackle. I told you earlier, I did my 53-man roster. I got it right here. I currently don't have a fullback on it because I think Andrew Beck is going to start out on IR. They can start out two guys on IR now, a new rule, where they can actually bring those guys back. So it's almost like two free roster spots coming into the season.
After they've changed the IR rules a lot. You know, it used to be everybody, once you're on IR, was out for the season.
Yeah.
But it still had been that if you were on IR at the beginning of the season, you couldn't come back at all.
That's right.
They've tweaked that a little bit.
Yeah, you had to be on the 53 to be recallable during the year.
We're just hoping against hope that Christian Harris isn't one of those guys who's on that.
Yeah. I had Noah Brown and Andrew Beck as my two, but that's knowing nothing about what the medical situation is with any of these guys as far as long term. But my point with your Hairston and British Brooks, I don't have a fullback on the roster to start the year because I think Beck's going to be on IR. I think it's really risky to put Brooks on the 53 to be your fullback. You know, like that's just, he's picking up that position.
Yeah.
And Hairston had four holding penalties, as you pointed out. He was terrible on Saturday. So I think for a few weeks, if I had to guess, if Beck isn't going to be on the 53-man roster, if this injury is serious enough to keep him out, they're going to try to muck it along with Cade Stover and Brevin Jordan as their fullbacks for a few weeks.
Well, all right.
It's not optimal. I'm not selling you on it.
I know it's not optimal. I mean, some of it comes down to also, like, I don't feel like Damian Pierce should be on the roster. Oh. I think there's a chance he gets traded. And if you've got your actual starting fullback on IR, then it does give you at least, it gives you one extra roster spot to keep an extra running back. You know, keep a Gumba Wale because of his special teams work. Keep Cam Akers and then maybe keep British Brooks and experiment with him and see how you actually like him as a fullback.
Yeah, and again, I have Pierce on my 53 right now, but I totally agree with your sentiment. You know, that I think that makes a lot of sense to me. And I have him on there because I think he's going to be on there, not that I think he deserves to be on there. Ja'Marr Chase back at practice with the Bengals amid a contract dispute. The Cowboys lose De'Ron Bland, cornerback, for 6 to 8 weeks with a foot injury.
Cowboys are the biggest team that's a mess and yet are going to win a lot of games.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, we'll do stock up, stock down for the Texans 53-man roster, and we will do Acknowledge Me at 7:20. Cam Akers is going to get a lot of attention on this show today. I'm just going to do a little spoiler alert for you right there. So we've got that coming up in the 7 o'clock hour.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to LinkedIn.com/results to claim your credit. That's LinkedIn.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.